Heyo! Welcome in, latest episode of Marler Monday on a Tuesday. Buddy, I'm not just saying this. I know you don't like the Cousin Shane comparisons. He's down like 60 pounds. I think you might have beat him.
I'm not, but thank you.
Okay.
He's down 60 pounds?
Yeah.
That's not good for me.
And he's not even getting married.
That's not
he's already married.
I need him to fucking reverse that. That's good. I mean, I'm happy for him. Also, he still blocks from
Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel, that's crazy.
He got him too much engagement. Can you imagine?
That's insane. I've had too many engagements too, so I get it.
Well, hey, that's a perfect place to start because I wanted to ask you, worst performance, USA versus Belgium or Alabama versus Indiana in the Rose Bowl?
I said it during the game, and I was like, this is like fucking Indiana-Bama all over again. That sucked. It just sucked. It was, I mean, they haven't played like that all year. I think it's the USA, I think. Like the Bama game was a much worse performance, but I also expected them to lose that game. I did not expect that USA would lose 4-1. And it was just like, I mean, there was so little. They just looked bad from the beginning. Like the first touch was off. Everything they did from like a dribbling standpoint, spacing standpoint, everything they had done from an attacking standpoint in the first couple games, completely different. They looked hesitant and scared and timid, and it just sucked, man. I was bummed out. What sucks too is we did a station watch party for it at this bar that me and Allie love in Baton Rouge. And I was bragging about it. I was like, hey, we went down to Pelican to Mars. It was awesome. Like, it was a great place. We had a good time. And the people that were on the show, they're like, that place is weird. And I was like, no, that place was awesome. It was like really cool. Anyway, so we get a watch party deal out of it. We go do the watch party. Another person that's like on air with us, she did the first one. And it's a big hit. They win. We go to the next round. Then I had to host last night, and we fucking lose 4-1. I was just like, that sucks.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nightmare. So, hey, our soccer fandom is over before it even really got going. And that just means everybody's turned the page to college football.
Yeah.
We got SEC Media Days right around the corner, so that'll be pretty fun. I wanted to ask you, before we get into that, though, you were a participant in the Manning Passing Academy.
Yeah.
I've never been there. Can you explain to the listeners what that's like and any takeaways from that event?
Well, first off, I thought it was like, I just assumed it was like 100 kids. It's like a million kids. It's so many kids. Don't clip that.
You mean just like the campers, right?
Yeah. Just the campers. There's so many of them. So then like, what was interesting was it's so big and spread out. Have you ever been to Middle Tennessee State's campus?
Yes.
Okay. So it Nichols looks a lot like that. It's very spread out, a lot of open field. And like the intramural field, soccer fields, all sorts of stuff around the campus. I mean, every single thing was filled up. And it was cool because it was like, you know, you had like 40 to 46 college counselors or campers to like help oversee everything. And then 20 of them were supposed to speak to the media, I think 10 total. Yeah, I did have the hard hitting questions for the players. And the cool part was the accessibility of it, because it's like you're sitting there and all of a sudden it's like Archie Payton, you know, Eli Cooper, they're all just there. And there's not really a big crowd of anyone around them. They're open and talking about stuff. Our buddy Chris Gordy went viral because he had this comment about how, you know, hey, look at me doing a 180 since I moved in the city. I got distracted. I think it was interesting because he asked the question, like, hey, who are you pulling for in the Texas-Tennessee game? You know, because of, you know, family ties versus your alma mater. And that was pretty cool. And just being able to talk to some of the players, that was neat. Now, what sucked is I'd never been. I didn't know what to do. I went to go just help Chris Gordy. And so I was like, I got up at like 5:30, which was horseshit. Drove to the airport to go pick him up. Drove an hour down to Thibodeau. It like you can check in at 9, but the media availability didn't start until like 11:05. So we just kind of walked around the fields. I got like fucking 10,000 steps in before 11 a.m., which has never happened in my life. And so then we, like, it was just, that part was cool. But then I left because I'd taken him back to the airport. I went home and I didn't even think about staying for the night part, which is like the fun part where you watch everyone throw and all that stuff. So next time I will do that. But it was a lot of fun, dude.
Wait, so even Chris, he just goes for the interviews, basically?
Yeah. I mean, so for this year, he did. I don't know if he was there last time, but we had another guy that was able to help with social that posted some of the videos of them throwing. Because that's what I wanted to see was the Joe Milton thing. I want to throw it 80 yards in the air and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if there's anybody that came close to that this year, but it was pretty cool.
And again, I mean, I don't know if they're kidding or not, but you were kind of the Big J journalist there. You asked John Mateer about his illegal touchdown, which he says was legal, and they clarified it with the officiating. So I see what you're doing. You're just trying to kick the hornet's nest. We had finally moved on from that. But totally. What was your thoughts on any of that?
I think the biggest takeaway from what he said was he was like, it was legal. We asked him. And like, I fully, fully believe that Oklahoma went over this with the refs to make sure it was legal. And I think that what ended up happening was that the refs were like, yeah, of course. And then they didn't know the rule well enough to realize that you weren't supposed to do that. And so that, I just thought that was kind of like, it's just par for the course, I think, with the SEC, because the SEC has been so bad with the officiating stuff at times and the explanation of it. And what I truly don't understand in any part of college sports is the protection that those guys get is crazy. I say this over and over again. You have a $1 billion product that you're putting out there and you're paying them like roughly $2,500 a game. That's really good money. I mean, the hourly rate on $2,500 over a 4-hour game is, you know, you're making over $600 an hour. That's great. Good for you. But also, it would be much better if this was their full-time job, there was any sort of consequences attached to it. And also, you had to accept responsibility or address and acknowledge the media or fans or whatever afterwards when you mess up. I think there's obviously the human error is going to be a part of sports for a long time. We all get that. But at the same time, it's like if you are, you think about all the things that go on in a season that kind of the sliding doors that it creates for how one team can progress. One team maybe goes off the rails or coach ends up losing his job or like there's so many things that are at stake over you getting a call right. And we have all these fucking cameras now, just figure it out.
Right. So, I mean, if anything, if Mateer's telling the truth, and I believe he is because yeah. I mean, even if he had told you, he was like, yeah, it was illegal as hell. We got away with it. I mean, they're not going to change anything. So right. You might as well be honest. And I, you know, it literally is not going to change anything, but it just goes to show, like you were saying, the incompetence of the officiating in the Southeastern Conference. They apparently don't even know the rules till well after the fact. And I think that's validated by the fact they allowed that touchdown and then there was no issue at the time, you know?
Well, and then they had to come back and say afterwards, like, yeah, that was a bad call. And you think about Auburn, like, I don't feel bad for Auburn because Auburn has done a ton of stuff over the years where you're like, well, what? Yeah. Where I'm like, man, that's, you know, how many times, dude, people forget about the play before the kick six when Nick Marshall is running towards the line of scrimmage, all five of his linemen are 5 yards downfield. And like, if you're an Alabama safety or linebacker, you're like, do I fucking come up? This seems like a run because the linemen are all downfield. And he dumps the ball off to Sammy Coates. That's what tied the game. And you're just watching this. And you're like, this is crazy that this is allowed to happen. There's been a bunch
that
of
was over
like
a decade ago. You're not going to let that go, huh?
Ever. no, but it's the easiest example because it's like there's been a lot of times that they have benefited from bad officiating. This later been changed. And so last year, it kind of felt like they got screwed up. Dude, I'll give you another one that's more recent and I'm not so butthurt about. How about the game against Arkansas where he turned around to spike the football after fumbling it, which means it's a fumble. And then the week later, they were playing at Ole Miss, and the ball hit off of what's his name's who was the running back number four? Tank Bigsby? Tank Bigsby hits off his finger, and you see his finger get bent back, and then they don't call that either. And it's like there's been plenty of times Auburn's got the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. But let me ask you this. So South Carolina, my God, can they recruit any better? And does that change anything? We've had some Carolina fans ask, could that possibly cool the seat of Coach Shane Beamer?
I think it's an interesting question to ask for this upcoming season. If like, what does the number change at all for wins he has to have for them to potentially fire him? Because if you fire him, you are certainly going to lose a lot of these recruits, including Josh Dobson. Now, I think the easiest answer to that is that you can't tether your entire program on the hopes of one 5-star kid or a class that is currently ranked 25th in the country in recruiting just because you don't want to lose them to someone else. I mean, like, if he does not win 6 games, he's definitely gone. I think the number is probably 7. that you'd have to feel comfortable with? Like, I mean, because I feel like six would be a failure if you're South Carolina, just because of how good I think this team can be this year. And so I think that's the big thing for me with Beamer. The other thing too, though, with the recruiting, this guy has sat here for, I mean, the last two seasons, especially getting just like shit on social media over and over and over again about how bad he's been, how he's not a great coach. Even when they had the good season, they're 9-4. It's like, you know, what, and everything that happened with Bielema and the bowl game and wasn't a great look. And then you come in last year and you're 15th and you are 13th and you lose eight games. Like, there's just, he's not a guy that's gotten a ton of the benefit of the doubt, I feel like, which is understandable. And I get it, but going into this year, I definitely think he's on the hot seat. I also think that what he was able to do this weekend was say, we can go toe to toe with the biggest names and deepest pockets in the SEC. We probably can't do it every year, right? But that's why I kept saying this specific cycle is so important to them. And I think that if they can win this year, it's going to set up a foundation of success over the next several years. Like, Dobson is a program changing type of player. You think like the five of the top 11 players that are all time commitments or signees for South Carolina recruiting are in the last 4 years under Shane Beamer. Five of the top 11. It might be 6 of 12. I could be wrong about that now they got Dobson. But I mean, you have four of them that are on the same team right now that are going to play this year. I think for Beamer, that being able to say, listen, we have about $8 to $10 million probably tied up in Sellers, Stewart, Harbor, and Jacarius Peak. They're all going to go to the NFL. So now that money is going to come available and you can go out and spend. That's why you can go to a guy like Josh Dobson and say, we're not going to be outspent by Texas A&M. We're not going to be outspent by LSU. And oh, hey, by the way, that part seems to be a really big part of recruiting nowadays. But also, we put eight fucking dudes in the NFL in the last 6 years at the DB position. So like, culture, we got it. Coaching, we got it. Development, we got it. Like, all those things, you can now go to a recruit and say, we can win games. Now you just have to win on the field.
How quick were you and the Gamecocks? I saw that all over social media. Why would a five-star DB go to Carolina? Who was that, Ohio State people or
Michigan? Michigan. Yeah. I mean, and what's so funny about that, it was so obvious to watch like this thing unfold, because Dobson was like favored to go to LSU for a while. And then that kind of fizzled out, and it was A&M. And South Carolina had been the first to recruit him since like eighth grade. He replaces LSU at his final three with Michigan. I was like, well, that just tells me right now that like this is going to be a financial thing. And to watch people like Michigan, who spent $12 million on a fucking high school quarterback, and A&M, who's spending $10 million on this class alone, which is all by the rules now. It's all fine. Like, to watch them complain about getting outbid for once, like, blow me. That's ridiculous.
Have you seen on three, again, I don't know how accurate this is, but I trust him. The five-star running back, I don't know if you've been covering his recruitment at all, because it's one of the two teams you don't cover in the Southeastern Conference. But there's a five-star running back out of Tennessee, who's allegedly down to Tennessee and Ohio State, and they're saying he's going to be the first millionaire running back out of high school. Do you think that's smart to pay that kind of money for a running back?
So, against all odds, I'm still going to find a correlation with this kid, even though he's going to go to either school that I don't cover. His high school coach is Eric Kimry, who was the high school coach at the Hammond School in Columbia, South Carolina, where I was the middle school defensive coordinator.
He was on staff at Carolina for a little while.
He was. I think he's doing pretty well with that role they had there. I mean, that's, what is the name of the school? It's not Bowles School. That's in Florida.
It's Baylor.
Baylor. Baylor and McCauley have had that long-standing rivalry. I think just over the line in Tennessee. Where's Baylor at?
It's in Chattanooga, and it's so nice that so Spain, they're still doing the World Cup. Back to them real quick. Yeah. Where they practiced at Baylor, and that's kind of like where they were headquartered, and people were making fun of it, that we were sending the Spaniard team to a high school. But if you see the high school, it's like it's as nice as most universities.
Yeah, no, it seems like when I heard he was going there, and I think he's also the AD there too. That's a very good, very good move, I think, on his part, just because it's like that's kind of what he's comfortable with. That's where he's thrived. But back to the kid spending $1 million on the running back. I fully understand the idea that this is a position that has lost value in at all levels of sports. or all levels of football over the past couple of years. Like, I think the easiest example to make is Trent Richardson and drafting someone that high and it not working out well. But there's other years where it's like, I mean, listen, there are good running backs in the league where it's like, it does make sense to go up there and get a guy like that that's that high. I mean, like, maybe it's Ashton Jeanty. Maybe it's the kid Jeremiah Love from Notre Dame. I mean, there's several guys that have put up really good production at that position. And so I think spending that money on a position like that that can be a game changer for you is a really – yeah, I mean, I can't sit here and say it's a bad move necessarily. And here's the other part too. You think about Tennessee. They swung and missed on Levitt. They swung and missed on a couple of the portal guys. Ohio State's going to have Jeremiah Smith has gone after this year. God knows what he's getting. It's got to be at least four, I would think, this year. And their quarterback is going to be draft eligible. He might be gone. That's probably a guy that's getting two or three. They're going to have the funds to do it. Like this is – I'm not going to sit here and tell Elon Musk he shouldn't go buy a fucking island. Well, okay, that's bad phrasing. No one should buy islands anymore. No more islands for rich people. But like – or Bezos be like, oh, you shouldn't be spending this much. That's not a lot of value in that. It's like – they're going to have the funds to do it. And if that's what the going rate is right now before this bubble hopefully bursts someday with the NIL, then yeah, I think it's fine. Now, does that mean he's going to be a stud for three straight years? No, it does not. But I don't think it's that crazy to spend that amount of money. Again, dude, I go back to Dobson. Dobson got 1.5 from South Carolina, 1.4, 1.5 from South Carolina. John Meredith, who's another cornerback going to Texas, got 1.7. And so I think the bigger thing that you're going to start seeing is stuff that I already saw it mentioned in the chat, is that you're going to start seeing contracts that are 2 years. And that is something I think that they desperately need, because if they're not going to pass legislation to say you can only transfer one time during college, which I feel like or one time penalty free, which I think they need to do. But if you're not going to do that, having contracts in place like this so people don't just take money and leave, and you're not just like, what is the overhead on here, Mike? What is the actual — I think about like working at a restaurant where it's like you have like a food cost and like wasted food or things that get like thrown away. Like, what percentage of your overall budget is just going to players that are never going to compete or be on the field for you?
Yeah, I think it's different everywhere, to be honest with you, but I can answer one of your questions. If he does go to Tennessee and they do make him the highest paid running back ever, will he pan out? No, he will not. But sure. No, I'm totally kidding. But if you look at it, and again, these are major what ifs, right? But
yeah,
they got left tackle David Sanders, who was awesome last year. They got a 5-star Faison Brandon at quarterback.
Yeah.
If he hits, and again, that's the biggest what if of all, but if he lives up to the billing and then you add possibly the number one running back, I mean, those are the pieces to make a championship-type run for Tennessee, don't you think?
And if those positions, Mike, of those three positions, which one do you need the least amount of experience to be successful in this league?
Running back.
Yeah. And so I'm with you on that, man. I think, you know, the reason I feel okay with maybe the running back more so than other stuff is it doesn't mean he's going to come in and start right away, but it does also mean, like, of those positions, it feels like that's the least amount of development needed in comparison. I'm not trying to promise, you know, the moon and the stars for a left tackle that might need to develop and get bigger or get stronger and go up against grown ass men or even edge rushers or even like, you know, all of that stuff is hard to kind of navigate. Quarterback, I mean, like, you don't not recruit a 5-star quarterback if you have the ability to get him on campus. But at the same time, like, the ceiling for Faison Brandon this year, it's not extremely high. Heupel's done extremely well with first year quarterbacks. I expect him to be better than people think, but like, Bo Nix was a 5-star quarterback and we saw how average he could be at times his first year. Bryce Young didn't start his freshman year. How many 5-stars has Georgia had that didn't start right away? It's really hard to develop into a first year starter and be the guy.
Arch Banning.
Yeah. That's probably the best example. Quinn Ewers. I mean, he was also the number one overall player in the country. So I think if you're going to give it to a position, like, I do think that's the one that has the, like, the route and the path to play the quickest of any of those.
Hey, we played a little game last night on the show. We were trying to predict the leading SEC stat leaders. So for like passing yards, who's going to lead the SEC in passing yards next year? Steven and I both said Trinidad Chambliss. What would be your answer?
For passing?
Yeah, just it's strictly. We're not saying passing, you know, number one quarterback or anything. We're just saying most passing yards. And Trinidad might be the answer for best quarterback too, but I'm just kind of curious, who do you think will have the most passing yards?
I don't think it'll be Trinidad Chambliss.
Oh, well, yeah, I forgot. You work for the enemy.
Yeah. Well, also he has Keywon Lacy in the backfield. Right. It has nothing to do with that. I mean, like the way I always look at this too is like, okay, who's going to throw the ball the most first off? Mm-hmm. Because you know, in the past, this was always the easiest answer. It was like whoever fucking Mike Leach had at Mississippi State, right? Right. But that always seemed like the easiest route. I will tell you, it's not going to be Austin Simmons. That's an easy one. Marcel Reed will be up there. I can see Marcel Reed being up there. Texas is interesting because Texas should put up a ton of yards through the air with Arch Manning, and they might play more games. So if it's not just regular season, then that's...
regular season.
Okay. But the interesting thing with Texas, too, is... Last year, Texas, it was the first time I think the first 4 years under Sark, was it 3 years under Sark? 24, 23, 22, they had averaged over 2,400 yards rushing per year in those years. Last year, that number dropped down to like a little over 1,600. And you saw what they did in the portal, trying to go in and get like some beef up in the offensive line. And they should have a lot more continuity up front this year versus last year. They went and got two of the premier running backs in the portal as well. I don't know if it would be Manning because I feel like they're going to hand the ball off a lot to him. I will say this. I'm not trying to be a homer here at all. Alabama can't run the football. They're going to have to throw the ball a lot. That would not surprise me at all. It wouldn't be. I don't think it'll be Tennessee because of what Tennessee has. I think Georgia's going to run the football way more this year. You could talk me into Kenny Minchie at Kentucky because of where the strength of that team could be, even though they had that five-star C.J. Baxter coming from Texas. I think – I don't know shit about Rick Springfield up there in Arkansas. I said his name. I called him Alex Springfield the other day.
We call him Silver Fox.
Yeah, now I've got his name – I got first and last name wrong. So that's how – I mean, it's not a good start for me with that guy. But I try to look at this and say, all right, who's going to run the ball the least versus the like passing the ball – I do think that Bama is going to struggle running the football again. I just don't see. I mean, like you look at it, and the bar is set so low. It's like, you know, they can't be worse, but it's like they lost four offensive linemen. I mean, they lost one that's a top 15 pick. I'm going to have to see it to believe it with Bama. And I don't think LSU is that crazy of an idea either, because I think that the thing that Kiffin does, I talk about this all the time, that he finds five guys on that offense, right? And he's like, these are your best playmakers. Get them the ball. Tre'Davious Green is probably the first one circled on that board. Whatever receivers they brought in. And I really like Harlan Berry. I really love Dylan Jones. But I don't know if the offensive line is going to be beefed up enough to like be road graders and open up a ton of holes up front. I know Seton's really good, but I is he better in pass pro or run pro? I mean, there's a lot to kind of learn there. I wouldn't be surprised if it was one of those two quarterbacks because – strictly because of what they would be going like the run to pass ratio from those offenses. And the last one I'll say, since I haven't answered your question at all, Kamario Taylor with Jeff Levy. I mean, that guy, he started two games and had over 350 yards of offense in those two games. I know he's a great runner, but I think he's a better passer than people realize.
How about one wild card, a guy you didn't even mention, and he's probably not going to be the answer for maybe the following year if he's solid. Would you give any consideration? I know they have a great running back, but would you give any consideration to Aaron Filo if he is the guy? It's my understanding he's the highest rated or he has the most passing yards in Georgia football history.
Yeah.
Paired with Buster Faulkner, paired with a really good receiving core. You know, could they throw it all over the yard and then use ball to like punish people near the goal line? I mean, I don't think that's a crazy scenario.
You got a new quarterback. You get some new faces up front. You got a new center you're breaking in. You got a new offensive coordinator. The most familiar face in that offense is the running back. I think that, and Ball is the strength. He's the best player on that team. I think he's,
you know, you just described Indiana.
Probably. Yeah. No, a little bit. But I love the way he runs. I think they'll lean on him. And here's the thing too. Buster Faulkner's offenses were never – like, they were so creative, and we all kind of, like – it's not like it's a misperception. It's just the first time we all saw Buster Faulkner's offense on display was the day after Thanksgiving against Georgia in Athens when they had that 8-overtime game. Jesus Christ. So excuse me, I just threw up my mouth. that entire like that offense is like predicated more so, I feel like, off the run and RPO and I mean, like, maybe I'm wrong about this because we saw Haynes King just get fucking bludgeoned to death whenever he was behind center because he, you know, they ran him so much. I don't know if that'll be as much a part of the offensive play calling this year at Florida because you might not have the same skill set or toughness as Haynes King. But I do think it'll be interesting to see how much of that again is run off the ball. I think that you're going to see a return to like maybe the answer all along is Trinidad. Like maybe that is the case. I just also think that like there's another situation where you have a new offensive coordinator. They're going to try to run the football with Lacey a lot because he's been so good with that. And I think that's where your least amount of questions are if you're Ole Miss. And it's in a great way because I think he's the least. He's the smallest question mark you have probably on that team is the running back. The quarterback is second only because this is not anything negative about Chambliss because Chambliss is the best quarterback in the SEC, but just because he has a new OC, he's got to replace some targets. Like, you know, the tight end that was so fucking good last year, he's gone. I wonder what that looks like this year. If there's any kind of drop off.
Now, one guy we didn't mention, is he likely to lead the Southeastern Conference in passing? Probably not, but I think he should be considered. Shout out the fiance. How about Byron Brown?
No.
Who tore it up at South Florida, and he's brought half his damn team with him to the Plains. I believe he's thrown for 3,000 yards in consecutive seasons. Any chance he touches that?
No. I mean, he could touch 3,000 yards.
You got too much Bama in you.
No, I don't trust him being accurate enough on deep balls. I mean, he had a pretty good completion percentage on balls over 20 yards, but like, I have a hard time, and maybe this is me being biased, but like the games that I watched him the most.
Against Bama, right? Didn't he miss like six?
Well, but like, it's like, I kept watching those games. It's like, man, if he hits like two passes in those two games, they win both of them. Like,
right.
I mean, the one that was like 42-13 or whatever the score was a couple years ago, that game was 14-13 in the fourth quarter. Like that was a one score game with like 6 minutes left. The year before, they absolutely should have beaten Bama. And so I look at that and I'm like, I don't know what to take away from there. And I don't know if those receivers are going to, like, if one of the receivers had stayed behind, if Malcolm Simmons had stayed behind, or Cam Coleman, or Eric Singleton Jr., if any of them had stayed behind, I would feel a little bit better on it. There's just so much unproven talent in that receiver room.
No, that's fair. And I could be mistaken. Again, I'm high on him, so I'm not trying to bash him or anything. But I think in the Florida game that they won last year, South Florida, I think one of his deep balls was so badly underthrown that two of the Gator DBs like ran into each other because the guy had to come back to get the ball.
Yeah.
And then he scored on a massive touchdown, and that was the game winner. If I remember correctly, I think that's how it went down.
I can see that. He's not very accurate there. I think physically he's huge. He can be a punishing runner. I think Jeremiah Cobb is maybe the most underrated running back in the SEC going into this year. But also, you know, I just don't think that they're going to have to do that to win games either. Cause DJ Durkin's on the other side of the ball for him. You know what I mean? Like as a right. DC, I don't know if that's the answer. And now listen, maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe this is like what he tries to do with like the 2022 Tennessee team, where Hendon Hooker was just like lights out, but I don't know, man.
I don't even want to share it, but you see that comment from old David Chambers?
Oh, no. Is it mad? Is it really mean?
It's not even about you, but this is...
It's good, David.
All right. Well, hey, same question. Who leads the SEC in the regular season in rushing? So I said Deshaun Bishop, Tennessee. Tennessee brings back more on the offensive line than anybody in terms of snaps from last year. You got to believe that they're going to lean on the ground game because of the quarterback inexperience, and they got weapons at receiver. So I don't think you're going to be able to necessarily stack the box, but we have seen Josh Heupel, go to the ground game to a lot of effectiveness. So that would be my answer. Who would be your answer?
That's the same answer. I think Kevon Lacey is going to be actually.
Don't change it now.
No, I'll change it to Ahmad Hardy. I think Deshaun Bishop is going to be up there. Ahmad Hardy seems like kind of like a lame.
Is he even going to be available though?
Oh, also, yeah, I mean, well, okay, what's the latest with that? I don't know.
No, there's no one really knows.
Okay.
Now, I think he is progressing.
Yeah, well, that's good.
He's posting cryptically on social media, so people are like, oh, he's good, you know?
Okay, perfect. So
if he plays 12 games, he's the answer, of course.
Yeah, I agree with that. But here's the thing, too. Hardy had the most last year, playing less games than Keywon Lacy, by almost 100 yards. And besides that, you think about what like Missouri has coming back this year. They don't have as much talent at receiver, right? You lost Kevin Coleman. You lost, you know, Luther Burden and Theo East the year before. I think you're thinner there at that position than you've been in the last 2 years. You have Caden Green, good offensive lineman that you can run behind. But the biggest thing for me is this is like your bread and butter. Like Drinkwitz sometimes gets like talked about, like he's like this like spread offense, high power. We're going to throw it all over the place for whatever reason. In his three of his 5 years, Missouri has had, or maybe it's 6 years now, Missouri has had the SEC's leading rusher from season to season. Last year they had Ahmad Hardy. 2 years ago it was Cody Schrader. 2021 it was Tyler Beatty. So three of the last 5 years, they have run the ball better than anyone, it felt like, in the SEC. So that would be my answer. If it's not him, I think it's Deshaun Bishop. And only because of this. Keywon Lacy, I think, is the second best running back in the league behind Hardy. I think I really like Hardy a lot. I really like Lacy a lot. But Deshaun Bishop just kind of ho-hummed his way to a almost 1,100-yard season a year ago. He is going to be behind the best offensive line in the SEC this year. And most importantly, he's going to be the guy that they're going to lean on because the quarterback situation, you're going to be starting a freshman no matter what. And I think that especially early in the season, he is going to get the lion's share of the not targets, obviously, but like the production part of the offense. And everyone, again, this is such a misguided thing about Josh Heupel and his offense, is like that he wants to throw it all over the field because what we saw with Hooker in 22 and 21. But like the whole thing is spread the defense out as far as possible, get outside the hashes with the receivers, make them get spread out, and then run against a light box. Speaking of light box, there was a heavy box last night in Jeez Louise's mom's house. But anyway, but they try to run against a light box. And I think Deshaun Bishop will take advantage of that. And they will run him a lot early in the year. I think you could see him have a season where it's like, oh my God, this guy is being mentioned like in the Heisman type situation, like mentioned in the Heisman race early because of the amount of production, a lot like how Hardy was a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Hey, somebody in the comments asked about Nitro Toggle. Is he going to play a lot, you think?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about him, man. I think the way that this receiver group sets up for South Carolina this year, I'm just, as we get closer to it, man, I just am very high on South Carolina. Nick Harbor obviously is going to get all the accolades and the highlights and pub and all that kind of stuff, and deservingly so. I mean, he led the SEC and was fifth in the country last year in yards per catch with 20.6 yards per catch. Tuggle can just do so many other things, and he's got a lot more experience, I think, at a higher level than anyone else on the roster. I think Jaden Sellers is going to be really good. I think Mazio Bennett should have a bounce back year. There's a lot of other guys on that roster that I think are going to step up and be really good players for them in the receiving game. But I look at Nitro Tuggle and what he's able to do, like just the wiggle that he has and the burst and what he's able to do in like more like, you know, short spaces, getting open and getting like being able to get open and get free in smaller confined spaces, especially in the intermediate routes. I think he's going to shine there.
Brodo's request that you speak about his mother. Not Jeez Louise.
Sorry, dude.
How about receiving? Who do you think leads the SEC in receiving this year? And I took a flyer. I don't think a lot of people know who this is, but I went Anthony Evans, Mississippi State. I think he was like sixth or seventh in the conference last season. And their number one target is now in the NFL.
Yeah.
Jeff Lebby's offense is pretty prolific. I think he's prime. If Mario Taylor is as good as we think he is, I think Anthony Evans is going to have a ton of catches and obviously yards.
That's a good pick. I like that. I will say, I think the other names that come to mind, Isaiah Satanga from Oklahoma. I think he's going to be really, really good. That's probably where I would lean my pick to, but also Oklahoma's run game should be improved this year. I don't think they're going to have to throw it as much. I think the easy answer for me is a guy like either Mario Craver at Texas A&M. I think A&M is going to have to throw the ball a lot this year. And then I would say in the state, I think Cam Coleman's going to have a massive year. And you think about some of the receivers, dude, Devontae Smith was, you know, the receiver for Steve Sarkisian when he was the OC at Bama. You think about some of the things they were able to do and get guys open in that 2019 and 2020 season when he was the OC there. I think that you're going to see an offense that Texas has. They're going to be balanced. They're going to run the ball really, really well. But I think he's going to have him open a ton. I think he's going to have a huge year.
I think that's fair. So that's Stephen and I also, we predicted Cam Coleman to lead the SEC in touchdowns.
Yeah.
Receiving touchdowns. But is it crazy? And I'm not saying this is going to happen. It's probably not. But is it crazy that Eric Singleton at Florida reteamed with Buster Faulkner? He's the one that actually led Auburn in receiving yards last year. Is it crazy to say Eric Singleton may outproduce Cam Coleman?
Yes. Because I don't think he's going to have as many big plays.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, but there's also other guys that are still down there at Florida, right? Like, I feel like the receiving room is not completely bare. Right. And I just still think they're going to run the ball more than throw it with that offense. I just, like, maybe it's because of Haynes King was the quarterback, but I mean, I think they're going to still throw the ball less than they run it. I think the other one that no one's talking about, and I think they should, is Ryan Williams. Because Ryan Williams, if you watch any of these famous Bama receivers that have had over the past couple of years, or I guess past 20 now because I'm old as fuck, but like Julio Jones has this great freshman year, comes back in his second year and regresses, and then his third year he kind of blows up again. You think about Amari Cooper, same thing. Freshman year, he had almost 1,000 yards. I think he had like 999. And then regresses his sophomore year in 2013, boom, 2014, Kiffin, of course, is the OC, comes in, wins the Blitnikoff. Like there's other examples of that too. Just that have happened in more recent years. I think that Ryan Williams, first off, you're pretty thin at receiver, right? Like you had some injuries and you got kind of banged up. I think Lottie Brooks is going to be really, really good for Alabama. But I think Ryan Williams is going to be back this year. And you think about what his production could have been without the drops. And if he didn't have that lull last year where he had just a lot of stuff, I think, going on off the field that was probably weighing in and factoring in and impacting his on-field performance, I think he's going to be much better this year. Like people love to hate on things that are great. I don't know why, but Ryan Williams coming in his freshman year, what he did against Georgia, what he did in some of these other games – I mean, there was a time where we sat there and thought, like, of the three, Jeremiah Smith, Cam Coleman, and him, that he might have been the best one of all three of them. Now, I don't think that now, but I also don't think that he's had this massive drop-off that everyone else is kind of, like, you know, hammering him on it just because he had some drops last year. I think he's going to improve all of that. He's going to be much better this year.
I think the two things that killed him, Chris, the fingernails and hearing how old he was for 9 months.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which, not his fault at all, but hey, how about this? Damn it, I forgot what I was going to say. All right, how about... Oh, no, here we go. I got it back. Maybe I am a little toked up. We also discussed SEC quarterbacks. Which one will rush for the most touchdowns? Because I think that's a difficult question because a lot of these guys can run. Trinidad, yeah. Gunner. You got to throw Gunner in there. Marcel Reed. Even John Mateer's a runner. Arch, yeah. Manning, of course. And I think one guy that should be in the conversation, and if he's not, it's criminal, Lenore Sellers.
Yeah.
Byron Brown. Kamario Taylor. I mean, hell, it's all these guys, really. But if you had to pick one SEC quarterback to have the most rushing touchdowns, who would you go with?
So I love the Kamario Taylor one. I think that's a really good point. I'm trying to think what he had last year. He had eight rushing touchdowns a year ago in 11 games. It would be hard for me to think that he's not the guy that's going to lead that. I think Lenore's will be number two. And I wonder how much more they'll use him. But I still think that he's your best option for running the football, even with they've raised the floor there with the running backs they brought in and Matthew Fuller returning. Jordan Howell, the kid they brought in from Texas that was, I think, Christian Clark, the kid that was so good in the Cheez-It Bowl. What a fucking sentence that is. I think that he will be up there as well. I do think it's Kamario Taylor, though. I mean, like, in small samples from a season ago, he had eight touchdowns. I think you think about the the way their season starts, it's not easy. I mean, they get, I think in the month of September alone, they get
ULM at Minnesota, at Carolina, and Missouri.
Right. You know, I do think that he's in those first two games, you're going to see him put up numbers that I think that are going to be pretty impressive. Similar to what he did in the last two games of last year. Now that's going to fall off a little bit when they start playing tougher competition, like, you know, it always would. I just think that South Carolina and Lenore Sellers, they're going to run him a lot more than they did a season ago. So I'll say that Kamario Taylor has the most of any quarterback. I do think Lenore is going to have the biggest improvements. And I think you and I have talked about, like, in terms of what his production was running the ball last year versus this year, you and I have talked about this too. The lack of him, like what was the game against LSU last year where he had, hold on here, let me make sure I pull this up. Last year he was the second leading rusher on the team. And you think about what kind of athlete he is, okay? He had 149 carries, which was the most on the team, for 270 yards because sacked yards count.
Right.
I mean, that's insane. Like, that's insane. For him to only have five touchdowns, which also led the team, it was shocking to me. I think he will have double-digit rushing touchdowns this year. And I keep thinking back to the game they had last year against LSU where he ran 891 total yards on the field because he was running for his life the whole night. I think that you're going to see hopefully less of that this year. And his yards per carry. I mean, that guy having 1.81 yards per carry is insane.
Yeah, you say he ran for 800. I bet the stat sheet had him for like 30.
Right.
Because he was just getting sacked and running sideways. And
nonstop. And I like what you said about Gunner. I don't know. Somebody said SC is going to upgrade to the Pop-Tart Bowl this year. Well, the SEC doesn't have a tie into the Pop-Tart Bowl, idiot. So no, they're not. And if they did, it would be fucking great, and I would be front and center. I think that the Gunner Stockton thing, that one makes a lot of sense to me too. I don't know if – like, I think the stable of backs that Georgia has is probably deeper than anyone else in the SEC this year. I think that they will probably lean on guys like Nate Frazier a lot, maybe closer to the goal line than him.
I listened to Chris Lowe was on Paul Feinbaum yesterday.
Yeah.
And he said if the one quarterback has to make a play, like a fourth down situation, he's going with Gunner. I thought that was pretty interesting. Again, I don't think it's a horrible answer, but I don't even know if Georgia fans would have said that at the end of last season.
I was going to say, because I think a lot of that is probably because of what happened in the Tennessee game.
Yeah.
I mean.
He was money that game.
Yeah, he was. I don't know what they were.
The Texas game, he was really good. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad player, but
yeah,
that's a little bit of an interesting answer.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I think I would probably go with Trinidad, especially after what he did in the Sugar Bowl. But yeah, I mean, I think Gunner Stockton is, he's not going to wow you. And the thing that should scare everybody going into this year, like Georgia was their most fun when Stetson Bennett was going into year eight of being a player and was like 2022 and he's putting up like 4,500 yards and ridiculous fucking offensive numbers. They're not going to do that this year. Like they are going to pound the football. And I don't think they have the receiving core at Georgia this year, I think, is the weakest it's been in the last 6 to 7 years. And that's not saying it's necessarily super weak. It's just that in comparison to everything else they have, it's easily the, in my opinion, it's the worst position unit they have on the team. Like it's not better than what they have at quarterback. It's not better than what they have at running back, offensive line. The tight end room is insanely talented and deep.
They count tight ends as receivers though. The fans
I'm saying just that like separately, like,
right.
I don't think that, I mean, there's a reason why I think Bobo runs a lot of screens and stuff like that and stuff behind the line of scrimmage and at the line of scrimmage. I don't think they're going to stray that far away from that. I do think they're going to try to pound the football a lot more this year.
Hey, heading into media days, what team are you most intrigued about in the Southeastern Conference this year?
Most intrigued. I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but South Carolina and LSU probably. I mean, the LSU thing is like the LSU thing for me. I just don't see it failing. There's a lot of people that do. There's a lot of people.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Why? I don't.
Because Kiffin always whiffs a game or two.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to wrap my head around that happening with a $40 million roster.
He'll lose to Kentucky as a 20-point favorite at home, you know?
Right. That did happen once 2 years ago. I think that's also my biggest, like that's what I'm most fascinated to watch. I think everybody's answer probably is that. I think everyone's answer is probably going to be LSU, if they're being honest. I'm interested to see what Ole Miss looks like under Golding. I'm interested to see what Florida looks like under Pat Summerall. And then, you know, I'm interested to see what Tennessee's going to do with the freshman quarterback and how much that matters and how much better the defense is with Jim Knowles. Like, there's a lot of teams that made some changes that are key changes. Like, I'm very interested to see what Bama's going to be, because I think the sliding doors on Bama and the ceiling and floor, I just read an article about it. What do you call it? Like, over on LouisianaSports.net, shameless
words.
Plug. The ceiling and floor. I think the ceiling is 10-2. I think the floor is 6-6 for Bama. And I think that, like, there's a lot of spots on there that, like, what if they slip up against a team they shouldn't slip up with, and they also have this very difficult schedule? But the answer is LSU, man. The answer is, I'm gonna make a 30. I just don't think they're gonna fail, man. I don't, like, everyone keeps saying this about Kiffin, about how much they failed. And I get it. I get the 2024 season. I get what you're saying. I get that there's been years in the past where they've
Your popcorn ready. Remember, do you not remember that?
That was 2021. That was a great day. Went for fourth down like a million times that day. They were down 21-0 at the half. It was fantastic. But off the most recent year, we saw him grow up the most as a coach. And the only game they lost in the regular season was the one where they were in Athens, a team that's only lost one time at home since 2019, and they were leading going into the fourth quarter. Like they were 5-for-5. It was the first team that had scored on their first five drives against a Kirby Smart defense in the history of him being a head coach. And I thought he did really well last year. Oh, by the way, he did it with a less talented team than what he will have at LSU this year. And here's the thing too. Pete Golding is, I think, going to be a really good coach. I think he's got this program heading in the right direction. And I think that for the foreseeable future after this year, even when they lose Lacey, even when they lose Trinidad, the way he recruits, the way he wants to win, the way he's like so focused on just ball and not the outside noises, they're going to be a top 4 to 5 team in this league for years to come. This year, I expect him to make some first-year coaching mistakes. And the other side of that, I don't think that he's a better defensive coordinator than Blake Baker. And so I think that LSU is going to be very, very good this year. Again, when you combine what Charlie Weiss did with a better defensive coordinator, and oh, by the way, all the talent they have on that side of the ball, they're going to be really good, man.
You know how good a coach Kiffin is?
Oh, God. They were 11-1 last year.
He picked the wrong quarterback last year. How about that? Nobody talks about that.
That's a very fair point. That's a very fair point. How did that even happen?
They were all in on Austin Simmons. You know what?
Yeah.
No, I kid. I rated him number 3 in the SEC, number 3 head coach.
Kiffin?
Do you think that's fair or no?
Well, I don't know who you had two. Who'd you have two?
DeBoering. And everybody puts DeBoering there, and I see the fans get mad. They're like, what the hell has this guy done? All that really tells me is
people don't know
that we have a lot of elite coaching right now in the Southeastern Conference.
You know what also tells you? That he's 20-6 against top 25 opponents.
What's his record against Mike Norvell and Sharon Moore?
Mike Norvell.
Mike Norvell. Do you know who that is? Florida State.
Oh.
I mean,
I was thinking of somebody from the NFL from like the 90s. Fuck. Now I'm going to be really mind fucked on who that is. It's not good. Mike Norvell did beat him.
And Sharon Moore. I mean, that guy was clueless.
Yeah, that guy wasn't doing anything besides harming others and himself. So, yeah, I mean, a story we don't talk enough about, and I think it'll come to light at some point, but Kalen DeBoer letting Sharon Moore win that game so he gave himself a couple more weeks of life before wanting to threaten someone else with a knife in the kitchen. I thought it was really selfless of him to do that. Like, he could see that he needed it more than DeBoer did. And that's the kind of selfless person that he is. DeBoer, I think, should be up there. I go crazy when I look at this, and it's like, Kirby Smart should be number one, period. But then people are like, Sark, Kiffin, Elko, and like all these other teams or all these other coaches ahead of DeBoer. And it's like, DeBoer has owned all of them. He has a winning record against Kirby. Like, he's undefeated against Dan Lanning and Steve Sarkisian. And every fucking year we're like, DeBoer sucks. It's like, no, The board doesn't suck. You just hate Alabama because they skull dragged everybody for two decades, and you just want everything associated with them to be bad. That's what's happening.
And he's lost to Clark Lee.
Yeah, well, Clark Lee's a genius. He's built like the Oscar award.
No, but I think it's fair. I think he is number two. But I still think he's going to get let go or to leave Bama.
Yeah.
I just don't think it fits there for whatever reason. Okay. If the SEC has a Heisman winner, who's it going to be?
Oh, that's a good question. I think Trinidad's the easy answer. Because I do think that this whole thing with Kiffin especially has made them so much even more likable. And Trinidad's impossible not to like. He's awesome.
Were his recent comments taken? How was that taken in Baton Rouge, where he said Louisiana State University number one game he's looking forward to?
I didn't hear that.
You didn't? Oh,
yeah. Unless it's, I'm not gonna actually make that joke. I did not hear that, but I don't doubt it. I mean, of course he's looking for it. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be a great game. I think the answer, and I hate to say it because we did this shit last year, but I actually firmly believe it. The answer is Sark. I'm sorry, Arch. I think that he's going to put up stupid numbers this year. He was so much better as the season went on last year. Let me make sure I have this in front of me real quick. Think about like the completion percentage, how bad he was at the start of the year versus like how he was towards the end of the year. I thought he just got better and better. And you think about how many drops he had a season ago. He finished top five in yards per game, right? Passing yards per game. He finished sixth in total passing yards. The 26 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, again, just from where he started the year, and you look at how much better it got, I thought he was still really, really good against ranked opponents, only threw 2 interceptions against them all season in 6 games.
It's a little bit easy to have good stats, though, when you don't play away games, right?
They play away games. They play Kentucky. Mississippi
Aren't you
State,
the guy that's
Florida? They almost lost all 3 of those. So I do think he is going to be – it's him and Trinidad, I think, are going to be the best options. And I think that'll be I would not be shocked if we're in a world in December where they're both finalists, because I think that Arch is going to put up stupid numbers in this offense. It's his second year as a starter. I think Trinidad can go there and play. I think Trinidad's going to put up, like, really good numbers as well in that offense. I don't know if it will be enough – like to get to 10 wins. Cause I think that, you know, we're not going to see a lot of Robert Griffin 8-4 quarterbacks winning the Heisman. Right. I think it'll be him.
What record does Carolina need to have for Sellers to win the Heisman?
They have to be 10-2 at least. I don't think that's going to happen.
Not 8-4.
I mean, I can see them going 10-2. I cannot see Sellers. Did people fucking dismiss South Carolina so much for the, like, I don't get it. Like, I don't fully understand. There's like people I've like talked to in media, like that I like respect in media, not even the ones I hate, like all the ones at Texas, but like that I respect that'll say stuff like, well, last year we had them as, you know, they were ranked in the top 15. They went 4-8. So they're going to have to show me something before I put them back there. And it's like, who the fuck are you talking about? Right. Like what, like, look, first off, you're going to have to come proper when you come to me about South Carolina. Like, shut the fuck up. I think that they're going to be much better than people think this year. I think I love the fact that they're flying under the radar and people are kind of like ready to shit on them because they went 4-8 last year. And then 4-8 is a horrible season. I think this is the start of a really, really good foundational change in that program with what they've done this offseason, like retention wise. What they've done in recruiting, I think they're only going to add to those classes because of all the negative recruiting outside of about Shane Beamer. And I'll give you a bold prediction, the first one for the season here with South Carolina.
Yes.
If they start out 5-1, which they very well could, early in the season, they have like, you know, Towson, Kent State, they should start 3-0. The Bama game is going to be a night game, so that's going to be a little bit tougher, but they should, by at the very least, they should be 4-1, especially with those 4 games at home. Do not be surprised if they start out 6-1. And if they do, I think the AD, Jeremiah Donati, will come out and say they're going
to
play.
Would that like be eight. Just a loss to Tennessee, right? But beat everybody else?
Sure. That could be. I think that – what do you mean Jaden Daniels won it with LSU going 9-3? So what I said was 8-4, and those are different numbers. So I mean – What do you mean? So and so won it when they were 10-2. Yep. Also different numbers. You could try with 7-5, 6-6, all sorts of combinations. There you go. Eat your heart out. If they start out 6-1, which they absolutely can do, and I already see people fucking laughing in the chat. We're sure that Tennessee is going to waltz into the same stadium where they ran out of fucking fireworks a couple years ago because of how many points they put up on the board against them.
I am.
Nothing has owned Tennessee fans mentally more than that outside of Nick Saban for the last 20 years. They put sand on the field. Yeah, I'm sure they did.
I'm pretty sure they whooped his ass last time he stepped into Neyland Stadium.
That's right, they did. So I think that if they – and listen, Florida, new coach, Tennessee – new freshman quarterback, and it's on the road in Willie B. The Bama game, you could make the case they should have beat them 2 years in a row, especially last year. I know they get them on the road, but again, that's another new quarterback they got to break in. Mississippi State, new defensive coordinator, new quarterback. Kentucky, new coach, new coordinator, new quarterback. Florida, new coordinator, new quarterback, new coach. Like there's so much instability and change across these. It doesn't mean they're going to win just because of that. But I think it's also something where for the first time in a while for South Carolina, they are getting they are more favorable matchups in like for them than they've had in the past. And the schedule, everyone talks about how bad the schedule is. This is the easiest the schedule's been in 10 years in comparison to some of the stuff in the past. There's two games on here that I think are definite losses. It's Oklahoma and Georgia. You could absolutely talk me into A&M being a loss as well. But I think that they are capable of winning a lot of games this year. And if they do, expect the AD to come out and make a verbal and vocal pledge to Shane Beamer that they're going to make sure he's here, like he's not going anywhere. His job is safe. He's coming back next year, and get out ahead of that early, because there's a lot of recruits in this current recruiting class that are, I think, have been negatively recruited against with Shane Beamer because he's going to be gone. He's going to be fired from next year. If they get off to that start, I fully expect them to kind of give a public display of what's the word I'm looking here for?
It's love. Not affection.
Of love for Shane Beamer to tell him he's coming back. So there you go.
All right. I love that. Final question for you. So
SC loses to Mississippi State. Shut the fuck up.
We've been so optimistic. Who's going to be the biggest disappointment in the SEC based on, you know, the preseason? And I know it's not out yet, but like preseason top 25. So I'm looking for a team that's likely to be ranked that's going to end the season not ranked.
I don't want to say this. I think it's Bama or Ole Miss.
Bama it is. All right.
I just think.
Clip it.
They could lose all four of those games in the middle.
Yeah.
Georgia, Tennessee, A&M, and LSU. They could lose all four of those. I think they're going to win the last three. I think they're going to win the first three. And they're going to be favored to win the next two, but I just have a hard time thinking. And Georgia's not going to. Every time I say this, Georgia ends up fucking losing to them. So it's like I feel like an idiot because I do this every single year with them. People talk about we do this every year with South Carolina. No, we fucking do this every year. Or A&M. We do this every year with A&M. No, we fucking do this every year with Georgia and Alabama. That Georgia's going to turn the corner and finally beat them, and somehow whether it's Sabor or Saban, they figure out a way to beat them. They could lose all four of those games. I think going 2-2 in those four games is going to be very unlikely. Are they good enough to avoid a on the road at Mississippi State in like a sleepy game where you have Georgia the next week? Remember, you only get one bye week.
Right.
you only get one bye week this year. So I think that's gonna be tough. Dude, the Kentucky game. We don't know. What do we know about Kentucky? I mean, I know that Joe Sloan is the OC. That gives me a lot of confidence. But I mean, I think Bama going on the road to Kentucky in week two is not like every time I look at this Alabama program with Kalen DeBoer, there's so many things that you are like, hey, they should give him more credit. They beat four straight ranked opponents in 4 weeks last year. First team in the SEC history to do that. But fuck, dude, they also lost at home to Oklahoma because of how bad the offense was. They couldn't run the ball against Georgia. And oh, by the way, as a 14-point favorite in game one, they got fucking ran through against Florida State. And it's very hard to look at this thing and say every time something really positive happens, something stupid also happens in just a 2-year sample size. but you beat Georgia at home, number one team in the country, 2024. You get out to a 30-7 lead, and all of a sudden, Bama's number one. You're like, oh my God. I remember texting my mother, do not clip this, texting my mother, and I was like, they beat Georgia. What if DeBoer is just the next Saban? And she's like, you're stupid or drunk or both. And then they lose to Vandy the next week. Or when they beat LSU with like a drum to have a clear shot to make the playoff in year one. And then what happens? They lose to fucking Oklahoma. Not just lose, they lost 24-3. And so it's hard for me to look at that and say that something isn't going to go awry. And that's when everything else has to go according to plan. And like, think about those games last year. Vandy's on their way to going up 14-0. To go in that game in Tuscaloosa, and they fumble inside the 10-yard line. All Georgia had to do was kick a fucking field goal to tie it up and had all the momentum in the world in the first game, and they go for it on fourth down and get stopped. I mean, I don't think the Tennessee game was as close, but even with that pick six, I mean, that they could have come within 2 points. Missouri, there was a fourth down pick they had to get late in the game when they were driving. There's just a lot of situations like that. Auburn, I mean, there's a lot of situations like that that I think he did a great job getting through. I don't know if he can do it for year three with a new quarterback.
If Bama didn't convert that fourth and goal, would DeBoer still be the coach today?
Which fourth and goal?
Against in the Iron Bowl?
That's a good question. That's a really good question because he wouldn't have made the playoff.
Right.
But again, but think about what I'm saying with the roller coaster of this, where it's like for 4 weeks, they beat all these ranked teams ahead of them. And like that you're like, oh man, like on the road against Missouri. But there's like the Oklahoma game. They should have beaten Oklahoma 2 years in a row. They got their ass beat once. And then the other time they were at home, it's like, I don't know what all these things went wrong. You just couldn't fucking figure it out and get out of your own way. And then now your back's against the wall against Auburn. And it's like, dude, you had a 17-point lead in that game. And it should have never been that close. It should have never been that close. But then you beat Auburn. And you're 10-2 with this incredible resume. You're going to make the playoff. And it's like, yeah, we're back. We got to go play who? Oh, okay. We do pretty well against them. -3 yards rushing. Go on the road. You're down 17-0 to Oklahoma. Fucking storm back. Win by 10. Hey, we can go beat Indiana. They haven't fucking played anybody. Got your dick kicked in. I cannot do this. I cannot do this. Unless it's a diet or my weight, I cannot do this. Over and over like this.
Or your sexuality, right?
Or my sexuality. It's fluid, just like liquid flames.
Oh, come on. What do you do? All right. Hey, that may be your best appearance yet. I think you're in mid-season form already. Tell the cousins where to follow you, where to find all your work.
I'll be at Brodo's mom's house tonight. I'll be at G's Louise's mom's house on Friday. I'll be at his dad's house on Saturday. Not telling you what for. And then Vern_Funquist on Twitter as well.
All right, perfect. We'll catch you on the next one. We'll be back tonight with Cousin Jay. See ya.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.